You would open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. One of our favorite shows that we like as a family is the show Trick My Truck. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this particular show, but my daughter Hannah and I in particular enjoy this show. And if you've never watched Trick My Truck, it's on CMT and it runs at all different times. But what's interesting about it is it's usually big rigs, but not always anymore, but generally it's some kind of work truck. I mean, they've even done pickup trucks and even ice cream trucks and so forth. But generally what they'll do is they'll start off with some vehicle. It's usually a work vehicle. Usually it's someone that spent their lives working hard, serving others, and their truck's old and worn out and they need a break. And so somebody writes into the show and tells them about this trucker in need. And so their team will come in and they'll take this old vehicle and they'll take the person's keys and they'll give them a loaner truck while they're working on it. And they'll start with this old vehicle and then they'll begin to work on it. They usually come up with some kind of plan. They usually give it a name for whatever they're going to transform the truck into. And they'll start tearing it apart and painting it. And they'll change inside and out everything from chrome to lights to upholstery to, if they've got a cab in the back, change out the bed. They'll put them in big screens and do all kinds of things to those vehicles until they've transformed it into something new and different. The picture that's up on the screen actually in the lower corner is one called Chill Factor. Put that up there because that happens to be one of Hannah's favorites. Basically, they transformed the truck and made it look like a snowmobile. And so what is interesting is they can take this old beat-up truck and they can transform it into something new. Tonight we're not going to talk about Trick My Truck. Tonight we're going to talk about Trick My Trust. We're focusing today in Vacation Bible School on Abraham, a man throughout the Bible emphasized as a man of faith. Whether you're looking at Romans chapters 4 and 5, or whether you're looking at the great hall of faith in Hebrews chapter 11, Abraham is put forward as a great man of faith. But tonight, I want us to look at the flawed faith of Abraham. And as we do so, I kind of want us to see the before picture. I want us to see the after picture. But I also want us to see that there is a process going on in between the two. That just as the guys on the Trick My Truck show are going to take an old vehicle and then they're going to start tearing it down and working on it and transforming it, and then you get the after picture, so you're going to see this happening in the life of a human being. But it's not going to be a group of six men with expertise in different areas from electronics to painting. But it's going to be the God of the universe, an expert in all things, especially an expert in transforming people. If you would, if you've not already done so, as we mentioned a moment ago, let's look at Hebrews chapter 11. I just want us to notice a couple of verses as we get started. I want us to look at verse 8, and then I want us to look at verses 17 through 19. Because I believe in those sections, those passages, you get in a quick glimpse the before and after picture of Abraham. It's interesting to me that when the Hebrew writer in chapter 11 was picking out the key events in the life of Abraham, there are many things he could have mentioned. He could have mentioned how he went to battle to save his nephew Lot, who in Sodom had been captured when Sodom and the kings in the neighboring cities went to war. He could have mentioned how that when they divided up because the land wouldn't support their animals, he could have put emphasis on the fact that Abraham let Lot choose first. He was a selfless man who put Lot above himself. There are a lot of things in his life he could have mentioned. But it's interesting to me that the two key things God picked out to put in Hebrews 11 give us the before, or at least the beginning, and then the after picture. Look at what he says in verse 8 of Hebrews 11. By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Then we're going to move forward in time many, many years. And in verse 17 of Hebrews 11, he says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he would have received the, and he who had received the promise was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. And so we look at those passages, and there are some verses mentioned in the middle, but those verses in the middle don't talk explicitly about Abraham. Sarah is mentioned. Then you have some summary statements about all the great characters of faith, not only Hebrews 11, but down through history. What we miss, if we just look at Hebrews 11, is we miss the process. We miss all the work that's going on in the garage. As God is transforming him from a man who's just willing to accept a call into a man willing to give up his most prized possession to answer God's call. So with that in mind, would you go with me back for just a few moments to the book of Genesis? I want us to look at Genesis chapter 12 through chapter 22. I just want us to hit some highlights as we look at God transforming Abraham's trust. And as we look at God transforming his trust, I hope that it'll inspire us to let God transform us. Just as was found in Hebrews 11 verse 8, so you have the beginning picture, if you will, there in Genesis chapter 12 and verses 1 through 3. God makes a promise to Abraham, and there he promises that he'll give him a great land, a great nation. And the greatest part of that promise was that through him all nations of the earth would be blessed. I want you to think about what God is asking of Abraham. We did an Abraham walk, Cindy and I, with the kids. And while they were had some leftover time after they had their snacks, we took them on a little trail here by the building where they journeyed to different places in the life of Abraham. One of the things I asked him, I said, imagine that suddenly God talks to your family and says, hey, and imagine a car pulls up right behind the building and God says, okay, I want all your family to get in and I just want you to drive. I want you to leave this town. I want you to leave your school, your buddies, your friends. I want you to leave everything you know in this area you're comfortable with. I just want you to drive and I'll tell you when you get there that you're in the right place. And I talked to the little kids about how hard that would be, and they agreed that that would be hard to do. Man, I don't know if I want to leave all my friends. You know, I don't know if I want to give up all this, even if my mom and dad go with me. It'd be a tough thing to do. You know, I'm reminded that I believe it was August 23rd of 1864 that President Abraham Lincoln wrote down a declaration on a piece of paper. He folded it up and asked the cabinet of the United States to sign on to that document without ever having seen it. Remarkably, they all agreed to do so. Why? My suspicion is they trusted the man who wrote the document. And that's what God says to Abraham. I'm going to show you a place that I have prepared for you. But what I've got to do first is get you to leave the place you're at now. And then what we see in Abraham is his journey begins. That journey of transformation begins because he's willing to give the keys to God. You see, that's one of the first things that has to happen in Trick My Truck. When they come to wherever you're at and tell you they're going to transform your truck, you've got to give up your keys. You've got to give them the keys to your vehicle and turn it over to them so they can start working on it. That's what God calls His people to do. He says, I can transform your life. I can take you places you've never been. I can take you to a new transformed way of living. I can give your life beauty and hope you've never had before. But you've got to give me the keys to your heart. And you've got to trust that I'll take you where you want to go. And so what you see is the before picture. You see Abraham handing him the keys of his life. God said, go. And Abraham went, or Abram as his name was at that time, at 75 years of age, left journeying towards the land of Canaan. But what I want us to think about is that as he works from the man we see in chapter 12 to the man we see in chapter 22, along the way we're going to see two consistent things. We're going to see his flaws, and we're going to see the Father's faithfulness. Let's start talking a little bit about Abraham's flaws. I want you to look over in that same chapter, chapter 12 of Genesis, and verse 13. We just looked at verses 1 through 3 and even referred to verse 4. But what happens, because of famine, they've come into the land of Canaan. They went first to Shechem and then to Bethel. But because of famine, they've journeyed down to Egypt. And apparently Abraham's wife, Sarah, is very, very beautiful. So beautiful that Abraham was afraid that Pharaoh, king of Egypt, would kill him to get his wife. And so he tells his wife, when we get there and they ask who you are, you tell them that you're my sister. Now we're going to learn later, I believe it's in chapter 19, that she is in fact his half-sister. They have the same father, but a different mother. Now when I told the kids this on our Abraham walk, this is the point where they all went, ooh, okay, because that was kind of weird to them. And we talked about how that in a time when there were not as many people, sometimes those things happen. But we talk about here that basically what he did is he kind of told the truth. He kind of told a little bit of the truth. Technically, she was his half-sister, but he didn't, as we would say in a court of law, tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. He held back truth from Pharaoh, and that which he held back was deadly. And because he held it back, and Pharaoh was making preparations literally to marry Sarah, or Sarai as she was called still at this moment, then bad things began to happen to Pharaoh's household, and Pharaoh began to realize that the God of Abraham must be upset with him. And he goes to Abram and says, you know, why have you lied to me? Why have you done this to me? And he sent them out. Now I want us to think about this. God has just told him he was going to make him a great nation. Now if he's going to make him a great nation, in other words, his descendants are going to become a great nation, what does he have to have? He's got to have children. Okay? He's got to live long enough to have children. So based on the fact that God has just promised him, I'm going to make you a great nation, he has left everything he's known and journeyed to a foreign land to live. And again, Hebrews 11 talks about that, that he was willing to live as a stranger, an alien in a foreign land. But now here he's down in Egypt, having been promised by God he's going to have descendants enough that will become a great nation. Now he's afraid when he's in the face-to-face, in the midst of the battle, face-to-face with struggle and persecution and hardship, he gets scared. He forgets the promise. He's afraid Pharaoh's going to kill him. He's forgotten that God said you're going to have descendants. To have descendants, he's got to live, which means God's not going to let Pharaoh kill him. But he got scared and he took matters into his own hands. Abraham, though he was a great man of faith, had a flawed faith. It was not a perfect faith. There were times when he struggled. Yet here's what's interesting to me. In spite of the flaws in his faith, the father was still faithful. Let me look at a couple of examples of that. Look in chapter 13 of Genesis in verses 14 through 18. Basically what you have here is a second time God repeating the promise to Abraham. If you look in verse 15, for all the land which you see I will give to you and to your descendants forever. I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can be numbered. And so God says, in spite of the flaws in Abraham's faith, he repeats the promise to him. He says, I'm going to give you what I promised. Your people shall be multiplied and they shall fill the land. Not only does he do it in chapter 13, but if you go to chapter 15, God is going to repeat the same commitment. If you look in verse 4, it says, then behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, This man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir. Let me stop for a moment. When God spoke to Abraham, some years have passed since that promise of Genesis 12. Don't know exactly how many years. We know years. We know it's less than 10 years. And we'll talk about why we would say that in a moment. But in that time, he's began to wonder. And at that moment in time, the person who's going to inherit his fortune is a slave in his household that is not a child of his. And God says, no, that man's not going to be your heir. You're going to have a son. And he took him outside in verse 5 and said, now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them. And he says, so shall your descendants be. And then he believed the Lord and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. But you see two things there. I want you to see, in spite of his flaws, God faithfully, the Father, kept repeating the promise. And I also want you to see that while Abraham's faith was flawed, it was consistent. He never gave up on the promise. But it's time to talk about a flaw again. If you look over in Genesis chapter 12, you're going to find an example of another flaw. We're going to learn in Genesis chapter 16, verse 3, that it's now been 10 years. At least 10 years since the promise was made to Abraham. 10 years ago, they're filled with joy and excitement. They're thinking, we're going to have children. We're going to have a big family. In fact, it's going to be so big, we're going to have a great nation. But 10 years down the road, there's no children. They began to wonder. They began to be impatient. So impatient that Sarah, as she would be called, comes into Abraham and says, here's my servant Hagar from Egypt. You need to go in and be with her. Take her as a wife also and have a child through her. Basically, even though God said, you're going to have your own child, after 10 years, they decided they needed to take matters into their own hands. And so Abraham went in to be with Hagar, and out of that union, a child came 11 years after the original promise, when Abraham was 86 years old, a child they named Ishmael. So again, we find that Abraham's faith is flawed. Did God give up on him? Did God cast him out and say, this is enough? You didn't trust me in Egypt. Now you don't trust me. Are you ever going to really trust me? No. God just kept opening up his toolbox. God just kept picking up instruments. God just kept working on him. And for the fourth time, God repeats, as a faithful father, the same promise. If you look in Genesis chapter 17, now he's 99 years old. We're 13 years down the road, 13 years after the birth of Ishmael. And it says, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him in chapter 17, verse 1, I am the Lord Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. I will establish my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly. In verse 4 it says, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father and a multitude of nations. If you go on to look at the conversation between God and Abram, basically Abraham is going to say, may Ishmael find favor in your eyes. And God says, no, Ishmael is not the heir. I've been trying to tell you all along. I'm going to give a child to you and Sarah. In verse 19, no, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son. And he says, the covenant is going to come through that son. See, do you see the process? Abraham's faith has flaws, but God's faithfulness does not. The Father keeps repeating the promise. As we continue on in time, I want you to look over in chapter 18. Because in Genesis chapter 18, you're going to see another flaw in the faith of Abraham. Men have come to visit at Abraham's home. And in verse 10 of Genesis 18, he said, I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah, who's 90 years old at the time, hears this and she laughs. She says, basically, am I going to have a child in my old age? Is my husband going to father a child in his old age? The angels, the messengers, are aware of this. In verse 13, the Lord said to Abram, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child as one who is old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. And then I want you to notice what Sarah does. Sarah denied it and said, I have not lied. She spoke to the Lord through His messenger and said, I didn't lie. And the Lord, who knows all things, said, yes, you did. But you notice what else He does? In spite of the fact she's just laughed at the promise, in spite of the fact she's just lied about laughing about the promise, He still keeps the promise. He says, when I come back next year, you're going to have a child. If we continue following the story, look in Genesis chapter 20. In Genesis chapter 20, they are traveling in the region of Philistia. Abimelech is the king of Philistia. Without going into great detail, basically what happens in Genesis chapter 20 is the exact same thing that happened in Egypt in Genesis chapter 12. Abraham goes into the land. He is afraid that he is going to be killed so that the king of the land could take his wife as his own. And I want you to think about the age of Sarah at this time and the incredible beauty she must have for him still to be afraid a king would kill him to get her. But I want you to notice what he says when the same thing that happened to Pharaoh happens to Abimelech. Abimelech's house is cursed because he's again about to marry Sarah and make her one of his wives. And so then when his household and his servants, they're cursed by God because of this sin that could potentially happen but did not. He confronts Abraham. And I want you to listen to what Abraham says. Abraham says in verse 11 of Genesis 20, because I thought, surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. And here is the passage I think I put in chapter 19 earlier, but is here in chapter 20, verse 12. He says, she actually is my sister. And he goes on to explain that. And it says in verse 13, it came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, this is the kindness which you will show me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. Don't you realize he does the exact same thing? He's still afraid these foreign kings are going to kill him. He still struggles in his faith. Yes, he believes that God is going to fulfill His promise, but when he's faced with the day-to-day reality of that, he struggles with it. I think he's a lot like us. Then we say, yes, I believe in God. But sometimes when it gets down to the nitty-gritty in everyday life, when it hurts or it's painful, when I really have to do something based on what I say I believe, there are times when our faith is just as flawed. But here's what's fascinating about the story. If you go to chapter 21 and look at the first 8 verses, God gave him a son anyway. And Sarah, who before had laughed because she thought, can I really be having a child? Now laughs with joy because she really had a child. And so important was that laughter of doubt turned to laughter of joy in reality, that they named the boy Laughter. And every time they said Isaac's name, they were reminding themselves to trust God. Never laugh at God's promises, but trust in God, and you will laugh in the joy that comes when God blesses. That brings us to chapter 22. This whole journey has been about a journey for a son. God said, your descendants will be multiplied into a nation. That doesn't happen till they have a child. So they waited and they waited and they waited to have that child. 25 years they waited for that child. And then when the child came in fulfillment of the promise, then in Genesis chapter 22, God comes to Abraham and says, I need you to give up the child. Can you imagine? Lord, you've got to be kidding. Like all these years, all that we've been through for this boy to be in our lives, and now you want me to give him up? But that really wasn't Abraham's reaction. The text actually says when God told him to do it, it says he got up early in the morning. And he went to the mountain, and he prepared the altar and the wood, and he bound the sacrificial victim, this time not a lamb or a ram, but his boy. It's interesting to me that when I read the Hebrews 11 account of this, he had every intention of plunging that knife into his boy. But Hebrews 11 says he believed God could bring his boy back to life. He didn't expect God to stop him. He expected God, at least as I understand it, to raise the boy he's just killed. Could you do that? I'll be honest with you, moms and dads. I don't know if I could lay my girls on that altar. But he did it. He had some flaws along the way. But you see what's happened to him? This man who lied because of struggle and uncertainty. This man who took matters into his own hands because of struggle and uncertainty. Now is convinced God can bring people back from the dead. He brought to life a dead womb and a woman who should not have been able to have a child. He enabled a man who shouldn't have been able to father a child, to father a child. If he can do that, he can bring this boy I'm about to kill back to life. If that's what God wants, that's what I'll do. And what we see is a picture of transformed faith. And in the story, he did not have to plunge the knife. For God stays his hand and says, in essence, I didn't want you to kill the boy. I just needed to know where your trust was. I've already got a sacrifice prepared. I didn't need a sacrifice from you any more than I just needed your heart. And that's what God had been working on all along. Does that mean Abraham's now perfect and he never made any other mistakes? No. Because all of us are a work in process till we leave this life. And none of us will be fully transformed into the image of Christ until we leave this place for eternity. But he'd come a long way. Because in spite of his flawed faith, the Father kept working on him. I want you to think about that passage we looked at again back in Hebrews chapter 11. It started out with a man who simply does what God says to do because he trusts God, but he really doesn't know what that's going to mean fully yet. And along the way, as he faced struggles, his faith struggled. But God kept faithfully sticking with him until he became the man of Genesis 22 who was willing to give up his son because he trusted God that much. What are some lessons that we can learn as we look at the story of Abraham's trust being tricked? As we look at that transformation in his life, I think first of all we learn that sin has a cost. Many people paid the price for the flaws in Abraham's faith. As we think about what he did when he lied in Egypt and what he did when he lied in Philistia, the local peoples and their kings and the people of the king's household suffered because of the lies that Abraham told. Not only did they suffer, but later on, their son Isaac would end up doing almost exactly the same thing. It shouldn't shock us that Isaac lied because his mom and dad were capable of doing it. As we think about chapter 16, when they took matters into their own hands and they decided to have a child through the handmaid, just turn on the news. We're still fighting the war that was started because of that choice. My guess is people died somewhere in the world today because of an ongoing war that exists because of the choice they made in Genesis chapter 16. So I don't want us to minimize that reality. I want to challenge all of us as we go from here to seek to remove the flaws from our faith, not by our own power, but by the power of God. Because sin has a cost. And we're not just the only ones who are hurt, but it's our loved ones often who pay the most difficult price. But the biggest thing I want us to see in the story is that in spite of his flaws, God just kept coming. God never gave up on him. God never threw him aside. God never said, "I've had enough of you. Will you never change?" God just kept saying, "I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise." And God came through on his promise, and I believe that's why we see the transformed man in Genesis chapter 22. His name was Bud. It was December. He was driving home. It was cold, 38 degrees outside. He saw a young boy leaned up against a building, had cut off shorts, ragged shoes, and a t-shirt. He's holding something in his hand. Bud was in a hurry to get home, so he drove on past the boy, but he couldn't get the image of that shivering young 12-year-old boy out of his mind. And so finally, at about the second light, he turns around and he came back. He shouted out the window and said, "Son, you need to go home. It's too cold." The boy shouted back, "It's none of your business, mister." Well, he wanted to go home, but he knew he shouldn't. So he pulled over, he turned the key off, he opened the door and he got out and he said, "I'm sorry, son, I'm going to make it my business. Son, it's just too cold for you. You really need to go home. I'm worried about you." He says, "Mister, I can't go home. I've got this shopping list that was given to me." He said, "My mama gave me the shopping list and $5, and I was supposed to go to the store and buy the things on this list with these $5. The problem is I've got a hole in my pocket and I've lost the $5. "Well, son, why don't you just go home and get $5 more? "Mister, you've never met my daddy when he's drunk. It's a Friday night. I cannot go home without the stuff on that list." So Bud reached into his pocket and he pulled out his wallet and he kind of fumbled through and he found a crisp $5 bill and he said, "Looky here, I've got a brand new $5 bill just looking for a young boy to help out." He said, "No, mister, I can't do that. I can't let you just give me something." He says, "Well, I'll tell you what, son. I've got a few errands that I need help with running tomorrow. And it'd be worth about $5 to me. Would you be willing to work with me on that?" And so they worked out a trade. And the young boy took the $5 and he went in the store, and Bud stood and watched through that big bay window in the front of the store as the young man picked out the items, and he walked up to the counter and he laid down his $5 and he gathered it up in his grocery bag and he walked out the door with his chest puffed out. And then across the street he saw Bud was still there. And he became that little boy again. He rushed across the street and he walked up to the taller man, and he reached up and he put his hand on his chest. He said, "Mister, I sure wish you were my daddy." And he turned and went home. Bud drove 30 blocks looking for another little boy he could give $5 to. You want to see in the story of Abraham? I see me. I see me standing cold and shivering with a flawed faith. And I see a God who just kept turning around. I see a God who stopped his car. I see a God who got out. I see a God who pulled out his wallet, who gave me the $5 when I'd already lost the last one. and a God who kept looking through the bay window, who's there with me every step of the way in spite of my flaws. I have hope because He just keeps coming. Don't you wish tonight He was your Father? And that's the third thing we can learn, is that we have a choice. Sin does have a cost. But God keeps coming for us and God keeps reaching out for us. God doesn't give up on us. The key to Abraham's faith was not that it was flawed or flawless. It was that his faith was continued to the finish. He may have stumbled every once in a while, but he never stopped running. He kept walking with arms outstretched to God. If you came here tonight and you're not a child of God, if you have never been baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of your sins based on faith that Jesus is God's Son and was raised by the power of God from that tomb, or if you're a child of God and you realize that you've got flaws that you need forgiveness for, I want you to come to a Father with outstretched arms who continue to love us and wants to transform our faith. Please come as we stand and sing.